have sailed. I have moved about this world of ours, and ever in search of the finest of its kind, we bring you the tops in Spine Chillers.
And you are listening to Radio Masterpieces on Valley 103.1, serving Duval, Carnation, and Redmond Ridge.
Groucho!
Groucho!
You go through life and never know the day when fate may bring
a situation that will prove to be embarrassing.
Your face gets red, you hide your head and wish that you could die.
But that's old-fashioned, here's the thing that you should really try.
Say, how do you do? A shake, hand, shake, hand, shake, hands. Say, how do you do? A shake, hand, state your name and business.
Miss Wyman, please, you're up.
Janie it is.
You introduce your girlfriend to your very special beau.
Uh-huh.
And then he doesn't call you, and the next thing that you know, you see them both a-walking down the street as big as life.
Where?
And when he says, my dear, I'd like to have you meet my wife, say, how do you do and shake hands, shake hands,
so
shake
fun.
Hands. How do you do and shake hands,
what's the
state
damn?
Your name and business.
What's your language?
This is Bruce Kaplan welcoming you back to another episode of Radio Masterpieces. Hope you're all having a great weekend. We just listened to Groucho Marx, Jane Wyman, Jimmy Durante, and Danny Kaye in a wonderful gem. We're going to begin our program tonight with a real classic comedy with Groucho Marx when he interviews his daughter Melinda Marx and her best friend Candace Bergen. They're both girls are 11 years old. I think you'll really enjoy that. Then we're going to go into two great mysteries, and I know you're going to really enjoy that if you like the thrillers. If you have any questions for me, please don't hesitate to write to bruce@radiomasterpieces.com, and I'll be sure and get back to you. Thank you so much for tuning in, and now let's enjoy our great programming.
Groucho, we have two very special young guests who are waiting to come out here now and meet you. They're Candy Bergen and Melinda Marx. So, girls, come out and see Groucho, please.
Candy Bergen and Melinda Marx. Now, which one is Candy Bergen?
I'm Candy Bergen.
Oh, and you must be Melinda Marx, huh?
Yeah.
What do you know? I never heard of either one of them. Girls, if you say the secret word, you know, you split $100. With me. It's a common word, something you find around the house. Candy, it's nice to see you.
Thank you.
A beautiful girl. And so are you. Now, I know all about you, but I'm sure our listeners don't, so would you tell the audience what your father does and
well,
who he is?
He's not doing anything right now.
Well, you know, there's 5 million people out of work. He may get a job soon. Who is he? What is your father's name?
Edgar Bergen.
Your father is Edgar Bergen, the Swedish Nightingale?
Yeah.
Oh. Well, then your brothers must be Charlie McCarthy and Mortimer Snyder, huh?
Yes, I am.
Melinda, if I'm correct now, correct me if I'm wrong, you're 15 years old, is that right?
Daddy, you know I'm 11 and a half.
How old are you, Candy?
I'm 11 and a half.
Copycat. How is it you're both the same age, and your father is Edgar Bergen, and Melinda's father is Groucho Marx?
Well, that's life, I guess.
So what are your favorite TV shows, Candy?
Oh, I like science fiction theater, Gunsmoke, Wyatt Earp, Cheyenne, Bachelor Father, Danny Thomas, and a lot of others.
I didn't even come in seventh on that list. It's lucky she's not the Nielsen. Melinda, who are your favorite comedians? In other words, who are the funniest people you know?
Well, I think you're the funniest of them all, but I like Richard Goldstone. I think he's very funny, and Topper Wittenberg.
Topper Wittenberg and Richard Goldstone? Are there some new comics on TV that I never heard of? What program are they on?
Well, they're not on any program. They're in our class at school.
Well, that explains it. I can't compete with them. I'm just not in their class. They're in the sixth grade, and I never got further than the third. Well, it's been a lot of fun talking to you girls, and I hope we meet again someday. But now we're going to play You Bet Your Life. Now, this is the reason Candy and Melinda are on the show tonight. They've been after me for a long time, to give them a chance to win some money for the Girl Scouts. And just to make sure they win some money, I'm going to ask George Fenneman, who also has 7 kids of his own. I'm going to let him ask the questions, and I'll join the girls in the quiz. Are you ready, George?
Yes, I am, Groucho.
May I offer you my seat?
Oh, all right.
I may need it later, but...
I think I'm going to enjoy this, because we have a little surprise for you, Groucho.
You have, eh?
Yes, we're not going to use the category you studied. As a matter of fact...
I've been double-crossed.
When you hear the rest... We went to the Beverly Hills school superintendent, and together with these people, we prepared a test taken from the 6th grade. In other words, questions that any 6th grader can answer, and I have them right here. I don't know how long I'll have my job.
Just a moment, I only went to the 3rd grade. I can't answer these questions.
You need any help, you think?
Your father is out here, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
Edgar. Edgar Brager.
Yeah.
Edgar, what class did you go to in school?
What class?
I mean, how high did you go?
Well, when I got into college, I had a little trouble there. I was in summer school most of the time to get reinstated for the fall term.
You went as far as college?
Yeah.
Well, I'll let you handle this by yourself. You know, so.
Double Indemnity, from the novel by James M. Cain. It stars Barbara Stanwyck as Phyllis, Fred McMurray as Walter, and Walter Abel as Keyes. It's midnight. Downtown Los Angeles is dark and deserted, but high above the quiet street, one window shows a splash of light. Walter Neff, star agent for Pacific All Risk Insurance, is in his private office typing a report.
Office memorandum to Barton Keyes, claims manager. July 16th, 1938. Dear Keyes, well, you old buzzard, you did it again. I mean, you were right on that Dietrichson claim. Accident and double indemnity. You said it wasn't an accident. Check. You said it wasn't suicide. Check. You said it was murder. Check and double check.
He pauses, fumbles for a cigarette with his right hand. Now we see that the other hand hangs limp and useless at his side. And spreading from below his shoulder, a dark red stain discolors his shirt. He takes a long drag on the cigarette, crushes it out, and then goes on.
I'll admit it, Keyes. You can always smell a phony claim. And you were pretty good on this one for a while. Only you made just one little mistake. You picked the wrong guy for the murder. And that's where I want to set you straight. I'm going to tell you who it was. It all started one afternoon about the end of May. I'd stopped at this house over on Los Feliz to check up on some auto renewals. The maid who answered the bell was kind of nasty, and as I was trying to talk my way in...
What is it, Nettie? Who's at the door?
That was her. That was the first time I ever saw her. She was up on a little balcony, standing there wrapped in a beach towel, showing plenty of curves. And I guess I must have goggled a bit because she sort of smiled. And then...
I'm Mrs. Dietrichson. What is it, please?
It's about the renewals on the automobiles, Mrs. Dietrichson. The insurance ran out on the 15th. I'd hate to think of you getting a smashed fender or something while you're not fully covered.
I think I know what you mean. I've just been taking a sunbath.
No airplanes around, I hope. Look, Mr. Dietrichson, about these policies...
Would you mind going into the living room, please? I'll slip something on and be right down.
That was all, Keyes. Except the way she looked at me. Sort of giving me the come on, if you know what I mean. I know. Especially after she came downstairs.
I hurried, so I hope my face is on straight.
That's perfect for my money, Mrs. Dietrichson.
Won't you sit down, Mr.
Neff. Walter Neff. With the 2 F's, like in Philadelphia. If you know the story.
What story?
The Philadelphia story. Let's see, what were we talking about?
Insurance.
Oh, yeah. Well, you see, it's on both cars, Mrs. Dietrichson. The policies are... Hey, that's a honey of an anklet you're wearing.
Maybe I ought to cover it so you can keep on talking about insurance.
Well, I've been trying to get in touch with your husband. He never seems to be at the office.
He's been very busy down at Long Beach in the oil fields.
Well, maybe I could catch him at home some evening.
I suppose so, but he's never home before 8.
Well, that's swell. Say, I wish you'd tell me what's engraved on that anklet.
Just my name.
As for instance?
Phyllis.
Phyllis, huh? I think I like that.
But you're not sure.
I'd have to drive it around the block a couple of times.
Let's say tomorrow night at 8:30. He'll be in then.
Who?
My husband. Didn't you want to talk to him?
Oh, sure, but I'm kind of getting over it, if you know what I mean.
Mr. Neff, there's a speed limit in this state, 45 miles an hour.
How fast was I going, officer?
I'd say about 90.
Well, suppose you get down off your motorcycle and give me a ticket.
Suppose I let you off with a warning this time.
Suppose it doesn't take.
Suppose I have to whack you over the knuckles.
Suppose I bust out crying and put my head on your shoulder.
Suppose you try putting it on my husband's shoulder.
Well, that tears it. I'll drop in tomorrow night.
See you to the door.
About 8:30? Will you be here, too?
I usually am.
Same chair, same perfume, same anklet?
I wonder if I know what you mean.
I wonder if you wonder. Maybe you can't understand that, Keyes. You've got an insurance policy where your heart ought to be. But I tell you, I couldn't wait to get back to see her again. And when she phoned the next morning and changed the appointment to the afternoon, I almost broke my neck getting over there. She met me at the door herself, explaining it was the maid's day off. Then she told me her husband couldn't make it either. So there we were, alone. Well, we sat around and had some light palaver, and pretty soon we were Phyllis and Walter. And then when she thought I'd taken the hook, sort of casual-like, she started pulling me in.
Walter, I'm a little worried about my husband.
Should I be, too?
Oh, silly. I mean, he's always down in those oil wells with the drilling crews. It's very dangerous.
Sure, but it's mighty profitable.
Why, only last week a crown block fella caught the foreman and broke his back.
Oh, that's bad.
Don't you think he should carry accident insurance?
The foreman?
No, my husband. What kind of a policy could he get?
Oh, say 125 a week cash benefit. Around 50,000 capital sum.
Oh, capital sum? What's that?
That's if he got killed. Oh, maybe I shouldn't have said that.
Oh, I suppose you have to think of everything. Walter, could I get an accident policy for him without bothering him about it?
How's that again?
Well, I have a little allowance of my own. I could pay the premium and not even tell him about it.
Why shouldn't you tell him?
Well, because I know he doesn't like accident insurance. He's superstitious.
A lot of people are. That's funny, isn't it?
Yes, if there was a way to get it like that, why, all my worries would be over. You see what I mean?
Sure, I've got good eyesight. He wouldn't know about the policy. And the insurance company wouldn't know that he doesn't know. Isn't that the setup?
Well, is there anything wrong with it?
No, I think it's lovely. And then if some dark night that crown block fell out...
What crown block?
Of course, it doesn't have to be a crown block. A car can back over him or he can fall out of a window. Any little thing like that, just so it's a morgue job.
Are you crazy?
Not that crazy. Good afternoon.
Walter, what's the matter?
Look, baby, you can't get away with it.
Get away with what?
You want to knock him off, don't you, baby?
Oh, that's a horrible thing to say.
What did you take me for? A guy that walks up to a good-looking dame and says, "Hello, I sell accident insurance on husbands. You got one that's been around too long?" Not me, baby. I'm getting out of here. I'm getting out of here, but quick. I walked right out. She didn't fool me for a minute. No, and I didn't fool myself either. Back in my apartment that night, I knew I hadn't walked out on anything. She had the hook in me too strong. And when the doorbell rang a little later, I didn't have to guess. I knew who'd be there when I opened the door.
Hello. Don't you want me to come in?
Sure, why not? How'd you know where I live?
It's in the phone book.
How'd you get out? Your husband away?
He telephoned from Long Beach, said he wouldn't be home till late. You know, it's about time you said you're glad to see me.
I knew you wouldn't leave it like that.
Like what?
Like it was this afternoon.
Oh, Walter, you must have misunderstood. You must never think anything like that about me.
Okay.
No, it's not okay. Not if you don't believe me.
Well, what do you want me to do?
Be nice to me. Like the first time you came.
It can't be like the first time. Something's happened.
I know it has. It's happened to us. Maybe I oughtn't to have come.
Maybe you oughtn't.
You want me to go?
If you want to.
Right now?
Come here, baby. I wanted to do this from the minute I saw you.
Walter.
How are you going to do it, baby?
Do what?
Kill him.
Oh, Walter, for the last time. Why do you keep on saying that?
Come on, pull yourself together. Just stop thinking about it, baby. So we just sat there, and she kept on crying. Maybe after a while she forgot about it. Maybe she did. But me, I couldn't. I'm not trying to alibi myself, Keyes. I fought it, only maybe I didn't fight it hard enough. And pretty soon I was in it so deep, I didn't even hear her when she said...
I've got to go now, Walter. Will you call me? Walter!
Huh?
I hate him. I loathe going back to him. You believe me, don't you, Walter?
Sure, I believe you.
I can't stand it anymore. Sometimes I think it would be better to hang.
You're not going to hang, baby. Not ever.
Walter.
Because you're going to do it the smart way. Because I'm going to help you.
You?
Me.
Do you know what you're saying?
Sure, I know. We're going to do it together. And we're going to do it right.
Walter, my arm. You're hurting me.
Call me, but not from your house. From a booth. And watch your step every single minute. It's got to be perfect, you understand? Straight down the line.
Okay, Walter. Straight down the line.
The first step looked like the tough one, Keyes. To get her husband's signature on an accident policy. But that turned out to be a cinch. He thought he was signing the auto renewals. And after that, everything seemed right in the groove. Phyllis told me he was going north at the end of the month to a college reunion. That suited me fine. There was a little clause in the policy, double indemnity for death by train. $100,000 instead of 50. And then, with only a week to go...
Walter, he had an accident at the well. He broke his leg. The trip is off.
And that's how it stood till a few days later. I guess you remember that afternoon, Keyes. You'd come into my office and you were kind of hot.
Can you imagine a stupid lunk like this Gorlopsis trying to put a fast one over on me?
I guess he didn't figure on your little man.
Yes, my little man, right here inside of me.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Walter, you can kid me about my little man, but he ties my stomach up in knots every time a phony claim comes in. Know what we found at Gorlopsis' place? Wood shaving, soaked in kerosene. So I hauled him in here and... Go ahead, take it. It's probably for you.
Yeah, why not? It's my phone. Hello, Walter Knapp speaking.
Walter, I had to call you. It's terribly urgent. Are you with somebody?
Yes, I am. Can't you call me back, Margie?
No, Walter, I've only got a minute. I can't wait. Listen, he's going tonight, on the train. Are you listening? Walter!
Sure, I'm listening, Margie.
He's on crutches. The doctor says he can go if he's careful. Oh, it's wonderful, Walter, just the way you wanted it. Only with crutches, it's ever so much better, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%. Hold the line a minute. Say, Keyes, suppose I join you in your office, huh?
I'll wait. Tell Margie not to take all day.
Hello, Margie. Go ahead.
It's the 10:15 from Glendale. I'm driving him to the station. Is it still that same dark street?
Yeah, sure.
I'll leave the garage door open. You can hide in the back of the car. The signal is 3 honks and the horn. Is there anything else?
What color did you pick?
Color? Oh, yes. The blue suit, Walter. And the cast is on his left leg.
Yeah, I like that fine.
This is it, Walter. I'm shaking like a leaf, but it's just like you said. Straight down the line.
We're back in Walter Neff's office again. We can see the dark red stain on his shirt. It's larger now, and the pain lines cut deeper into his face. For a somber moment, he stares at the wall, then hunches over the typewriter again.
We killed him, Keyes. In the car on the way to the station, just the way we planned. I don't think he ever knew what hit him. We stopped at a place I had all picked out. We shoved him into the back of the car and tossed an automobile robe over him. Then I wrapped some stuff around my leg, made it look like I was wearing a cast. And that's how I got on the train, wearing that and a pair of crutches. Do you get it now, Keyes? You see how carefully I'd worked it out? Dietrichson's body was in the back of the car, and still he was getting on that train. Phyllis kissed me goodbye at the train, and he told the porter to make up my berth. I said I'd go back to the observation platform. And that's where I had the first hint of trouble. There was somebody out on the platform already. Name of Jackson, he told me. The type that always introduces himself. I had to think fast. We were moving now. I didn't have much time, so I started fumbling around in my pockets. And then he noticed it and grinned.
I bet you forgot something. You know, I always do.
Yeah, my cigar case. I must have left it in my top coat back on the seat.
You care to roll yourself a cigarette, Mr.?
Dietrichson. Thanks, I really prefer cigars. Maybe if I could get the porter.
Oh, no need to bother. I could fetch your cigars for you. I'd be glad to.
Oh, that's very nice of you. It's car 11, section 4. Are you sure it's not too much trouble?
Don't mention it, Mr. Dietrichson. No trouble at all.
That gave me my chance to hop off the train. Luckily, it was just about the spot we'd picked, and Phyllis was waiting there in the car with all the lights off. We dragged the body out and dropped it on the tracks. The crutches, too. Then we got in the car and started the motor and got away from there fast. You'd better drop me off here. I'll walk the extra block back to my place, just in case.
All right.
Good night.
Walter.
Yeah?
Aren't you going to kiss me?
Okay.
It's straight down the line, isn't it? Isn't it? Walter, what's the matter?
Aren't you nervous at all?
No. Are you?
Yeah.
You mustn't be. I love you, Walter.
Yeah, I love you too, baby. You know what happened after that, Keyes. They found the body on the tracks. The autopsy showed a broken neck. They figured he'd fallen off the train. Even you, Keyes, you thought so too. And if we got by you, the worst was over. I was really beginning to feel relaxed, and then the following night...
Walter, I had to come. I had to see you.
You're sure nobody noticed you?
I'm sure. I looked all around first at... Walter.
Get in the bedroom. Don't make any noise. All right, just a minute.
Hello, Walter.
Hello, Keyes. What's on your mind?
Say, Walter, you got any bicarbonate?
No, I'm sorry. Anything wrong?
That broken leg. The guy broke his leg.
What are you talking about?
About Dietrichson. He had accident insurance, and then he broke his leg.
So what?
He didn't put in a claim. Why didn't he?
What the dickens are you driving at?
Walter, I ate dinner 2 hours ago. It's stuck halfway down. That little man is acting up again. There's something wrong with the Dietrichson case.
Well, maybe Norton was right. Maybe it was suicide.
No, not suicide. But not an accident, either.
What else? Murder?
I'll tell you better when I've checked on his wife.
His wife?
She's the beneficiary.
Oh, that's crazy. You haven't got a thing to go on, Keyes.
No. Not too much. 26 years experience, all the percentage, and this lump of concrete in my stomach. Say, I've got to get to a drugstore. I'll see you tomorrow. Can you imagine? No bicarbonate in the fridge.
Walter.
Be careful.
How much do you think he knows?
That's not what he knows. It's those stinking hunches of his. Baby, from here on in, we've got to really watch it. I knew you, Keyes. I knew how you worked. I felt like I was holding a time bomb in my hand without knowing what time it was set to go off.
Say, Walter, I picked up something today from Mrs. Dietrichson's maid. She saw Mrs. D trying on a hat, a black hat, like a widow might wear. Only it was a week before Dietrichson died. Walter, I heard from Jackson today. You know, that fellow on the train, he sent back those pictures of Dietrichson with an affidavit. He swears it isn't the man he talked to that night. Walter, it's coming apart at the seams. When I knew it wasn't Dietrichson on the train, I knew that dame must have had some help. She's got a boyfriend, Walter. He's been dropping in there every night around 12. I'm going to pick them both up any time I want to.
It's funny, but that's the thing that hit me the hardest, Keyes. That boyfriend of hers. I'd killed a man. I, I killed him for money and for a woman. And now I wouldn't get the money and I wouldn't get the woman. All along, she'd been dealing with a crooked deck. I did a lot of thinking that afternoon. And then I knew what I had to do. That night, I called up Phyllis and said I was coming over. I told her to keep the lights off and to leave the door unlocked. I was all set now. Yeah, that's what I thought. What I didn't know was that she was set, too. And when I let myself into the house that night...
In here, Walter. The living room.
Hello, baby. Anyone else in the house?
No, we're all alone.
What's that music?
A radio up the street. Sit down, Walter.
Just like the first time I was here, isn't it? We were talking about automobile insurance. Only you were thinking about murder. And I was thinking about that anklet.
And what are you thinking about now?
I'm all through thinking, baby. This is goodbye.
Goodbye? Where are you going?
Nowhere. It's you that's going, baby.
So you've got it all arranged, Walter.
You arranged it for me. You and your boyfriend. It's been you and him all along, hasn't it?
That's not true.
Well, that's what Keyes thinks, and what Keyes thinks is good enough for me. It's simple when you figure it out. The boyfriend will be here in 15 minutes, with the cops right behind him. I fixed that. They'll just charge another one off to him.
Maybe I don't figure it that way.
Maybe I do. Say, I don't like that music anymore. It's too close. You mind if I shut this window?
Walter.
Yeah? So you cross me again. What's the matter? Why don't you finish me off? Maybe if I came a little closer. How's this? No, huh? All right, I'll take the gun. Why didn't you shoot again, baby?
Walter.
Don't tell me it's because you love me all this time.
No. No, I never loved you, Walter. Not you or anyone. Until a minute ago, I didn't think anything like that could ever happen to me.
Sorry, baby. I'm not buying.
I'm not asking you to buy. Just hold me close.
Sure. Sure. Goodbye, baby.
No! What?
Back here in the office, Keyes. It's pretty late. Maybe they found her by now, but I had to make my report. I had to tell you all that...
It won't be necessary, Walter.
Hello, Keyes. How long have you been standing there?
Long enough.
What happened? Your little man pull you out of bed?
No, the janitor... Seems you leaked a little blood on the way in here. You're all washed up, Walter.
Oh, no, not yet, Keyes. Look, you don't have to find this report till tomorrow morning. By then, I can be across the border.
You'd never make it.
Sure, I can make it. If I started right now, that's all I'm asking, Keyes. Just this one break. Just a chance to...
Hello? Headquarters? This is Barton Keyes over at Pacific All Risk. Better send a couple of your boys over here. Yeah, they'd better bring an ambulance. A friend of mine just reached the end of the line.
V.
Valley 103.1.
Trusted him, his best friend had to give him an alibi, all because of a girl, a dead girl. Our story is called The Guilty Always Run. Our star, Mr. Tyrone Power.
To leave me alone all evening like that. It's way after 12. And...
Listen, you told me it was all right. You told me to go.
Answer the phone, will you?
Okay.
Or do you expect me to leap across the room
okay,
and...
Okay, okay. Hello. 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 Anybody there?
Well?
Nobody there.
What's the matter?
I thought I heard something. Hello. Hello. Hello, hello.
Somebody playing a joke, Jeff?
I guess so.
Karen?
Don't start anything, Janie, huh?
Was it Karen?
Janie, baby. Janie.
What?
Listen.
Sure. Sure, sweetie. What do you want me to listen to?
It's not my fault you've got your hip in a cast.
It's not your fault I've got my hip in a cast, dear.
Oh, cut it out, will you?
I'm clumsy. I go along on vacations to the beach and fall off a surfboard and break my hip, and my husband meets another... Are you going to answer the phone?
Uh-uh. No.
Bring the phone over to me, Jeff. Let me answer it.
Sure. Here.
Hello?
What's the matter?
You tell me.
I asked you a question. What's the...
Here, you take the phone.
Hello? Who is this? Hello?
Help me. Help me, Jeff.
Yes, this is...
Jeff.
This is Jeff. Who... Hello. Hello, hello. Well, whoever it was hung up, Janie.
Who was it, Jeff?
I don't know.
Was it Karen?
Now, why don't you cut that out?
It was a girl. Was it Karen? Karen sounded like she needed help.
Loaded, probably.
What does she look like? You never told me.
Very tanned, very tall.
And very beautiful.
She really is.
Calling here after midnight. Doesn't she know you're married? Didn't you tell her?
I told her.
You better go see if she's all right.
Now listen, Karen...
You'd better go see.
Yeah. Was 8 miles from Zuma Beach. Nearly 2 in the morning and a full moon and a few clouds and phosphorescence riding the lip of the surf. No one was home at Karen Lawrence's house. Her white convertible wasn't there either. I went home. Janie was sleeping, so I waited till morning to tell her. Then I went out on the beach and started to work on the surfboards with Lou, a friend of mine who'd taken the place next door.
You know how I'd raise this, Dent?
How?
Put a beer bottle cap on it and then set a hot iron on the cap. The dent'll pop right up.
Yeah, I might try it when...
Hi.
Oh, hello there.
Ah, hello.
I'm Phyllis George. Which one of you is Jeff?
Not Lou, huh?
Jeff.
Always Jeff.
Me.
What did you do with Karen?
What are you talking about?
I drove out to see her. We were going shopping today. She's not home. The inside of her house is a wreck.
Why ask me?
She told me yesterday she was going to load up her surfboard and try to trap you into some moonlight surfing. How did she make out?
She made out good.
Yeah, we went surfing.
Where's Karen, Sonny? All right, baby. I'm going to the cops.
Hello? finished resurfacing the boards after that. Not much talk. I kept looking down the road for the cops that girl promised. No cops. After a while, I said to Lou, "See ya," and went back to Janie. Carried her out to the strand of white beach we bought for the summer. Oiled her back and her shoulders and her arms and then her face. Then lay down and set the ball of sun spinning. And that's how a day got done. Around 10 that night, the moon was low but gaining altitude fast.
Jeff?
Yeah, honey?
It's a beautiful night out there. Very beautiful.
Uh-huh.
No sense you sitting around listening to the radio. Why don't you take the board, go surfing in the moonlight?
No, no, Janie, I...
Listen to me, sweetie. If I could, I'd go with you. There's nothing right now I want more to do. So you go, huh, sweetie? Don't let me ruin all of it for you.
Oh, Janie, I don't mind.
You go. Take the board and go because I asked you to. Because I want you to.
I went. And the waves were coming in gentle and fast and moon-crested from about 150 yards offshore. I paddled the board out, easy and slow, to where the moon was shaping them. It's where I saw her, Karen, her hair floating and woven in a web of kelp, and her face moon white, and her lips and splotches of color on her throat where the bruises were. Karen in the wet shroud of a silk dress. Dead Karen, in the sodden jacket I'd lent her the night before. When I got back to the house, Janie was asleep. I didn't wake her. I got into some clothes, went out to the car.
Hey, wait a minute. Is that you, Jeff?
Yeah, it's me, Lou. Lou, come out here a minute, will you?
Sure. I couldn't sleep. I was reading. I heard the car, and I thought maybe...
Something I want to tell you about last night, Lou. Something you don't know.
All I know about last night is that you and Karen went surfing by moonlight. This morning, a girl named Phyllis rode up and yelled cop in your face because no more beautiful Karen. After that, I lose you.
Just listen to me, huh?
Well, I'm listening, Jeff.
Well, like you said, I went surfing with her. After that, she needled me into taking her to that joint down the highway for a beer.
Well, it's been done. A beautiful girl sometimes merits a beer. Ah, Janie doesn't know about it, huh? That's what you're trying to say?
It was while we were in the joint. She... Well, you know Karen. You'd know what she...
Yeah, if only you better than I. Is that what you did, Jeff?
I had to walk out on her. She followed me out. I told her off. Put her in her car and told her off for the rest of time.
Married, you said to her. Happily married.
And a couple of other things I said. She cried, and then she drove off. I walked the beach for a long time.
Jeff.
It's the last I saw her, Lou. I swear it. I swear it.
What's eating on you, kid?
A little while ago, I found her. Floating in a kelp bed. Dead. I think murdered.
Where were you going just now, Jeff?
To the police.
Jeff.
Yeah?
Police is where grief is.
What?
You told Karen off, you said, and never saw her again. You swore it when I didn't even know what you were talking about.
But don't you believe me? Don't...
Police is where grief is. Police and Karen murdered can burst wide open what you got with Janie. And you forgot a thing, Jeff.
What?
You didn't walk a lonesome beach last night. You left Karen, you came to my house. We sanded the surfboards. Isn't that what you forgot?
Lou.
From me to you, an alibi. An alibi maybe you don't need, but from me to you. Because of what you and Janie mean to me.
Because of what he said. Because it was a big grief. Because it might kill what it was Janie and I had together. A summer and beach and sky and sea and a love I had for her. I waited till Lou had gone back into his house. Then I swam out to where Karen was. I took off her the jacket I'd lent her the night before. I swam back to shore and found a littered strand of beach and burned the jacket. And buried the scorched rags. And I went home and slept. And it was Janie who woke me.
Jeff. Jeff, there's a fellow outside.
Huh? What?
A fellow.
outside. Wants to talk to you.
Who?
A Mr. Anders. A policeman.
Look, Janie, no matter what, that phone call last night...
From Karen? That phone call?
No matter what, don't say anything about it. Nothing.
A fellow's waiting at the door for you, Jeff.
No matter what, do you hear? No matter... You want to see me?
You, Jeff Marlowe?
That's right.
Swimmer found a girl out in the kelp this morning. Girl we all know around here. Karen Lawrence.
Well, what's that got to do with me?
She was murdered, Mr. Marlowe. Strangled. Somebody killed her and put her out on the tide. Let's go inside and talk about it.
Karen Lawrence, Mr. Marlowe. How come she's dead?
I don't know.
Jeff?
Oh, it's nothing, Janie. This gentleman just wants to know if I know Karen Lawrence.
Why does the gentleman want to know that, Jeff?
Well...
Why do you want to know that?
She's dead.
That's not the question I asked you.
She was murdered.
That's still not the question.
Asking around about her, your husband's name gets mentioned more than anybody else's.
I see.
And she was murdered, all right, in case you've got any doubt about it. Strangled. Bruise marks here and here. Two thumbs, you know. Wearing all her clothes. Good swimmer, I understand, so we've got a tab at murder. And I've got to ask, Mr. Marlowe, if you killed her.
No, sir, I did not.
But you know her.
Oh, yes, sir.
Now, look, you don't have to yes, sir, and no, sir, me.
Okay.
You were with her last night. We got that from Phyllis George, a friend of hers.
Well, look, this is what happened. One day, Karen comes up from Malibu with a board and pretty helpless about getting from her car to the surf.
Yeah, when was this?
10 days ago. 11.
11. 11. The afternoon of the morning I broke my hip.
Well, I can pick it all up till yesterday, Marlowe. Talk has it she liked you.
Did talk have it I tried to ignore her?
Yes, it did.
Did talk have it that right off I told her I was married?
Yes,
and...
yes, it did. I also checked next door, your friend Lou Foster. He says he was with you around the time the girl was probably killed.
Then what are you coming around here for? And
what about the bar? Bar on the coast highway near Topanga Canyon, Marlowe. Barkeep said
okay,
that you were...
Okay, okay. Like a fool, I took her down there for a beer night before last.
Night before last is when she was killed.
To talk it out, to tell her to stay away. Look, maybe to you it sounds...
Now don't get yourself excited, Marlowe. That's just what I do. Dame was chasing me, didn't want her to. Take her some quiet place and talk to her. Adult, over a beer. Well, I hope your hip gets better, Mrs. Marlowe.
Thanks.
And thank you for your courtesy, both of you.
Sure.
Jeff?
Yeah?
You didn't tell me you took her for a drink.
Just for a beer.
Oh.
Now look, Janie.
To tell her not to love you anymore, Jeff? What's been going on, anyhow?
Hello?
Mr. Marlowe?
That's right. Who's this?
Norm. Mr. Marlowe, I got the Topanga Innery on the Coast Highway. You've been in here. In fact, night before last, you were in here with Karen Lawrence. I understand from the police that Karen...
What do you want?
I can't talk to you over the phone, Mr. Marlowe, but I wish you'd stop in here any time in the next half hour or so. If I were in your shoes, I would, Mr. Marlowe. Bye.
Who was it?
Nobody.
Who was it, Jeff?
Nobody. I'm going out.
You don't want to hear my troubles, Mr. Marlowe, so I'll just tell you this. I didn't tell that policeman about the arguments you and that girl had in here. Since you were the only ones in here, then I'm the only one who knows about it. And what happened out front when you left? How she was carrying on and crying. And from what Mr. Anders, that policeman, said, she must have been murdered a couple hours after you left here with her. Now, look, I don't know what you told the police, but you came down when I called, Mr. Marlowe, so what am I to figure? As long as you're here, Mr. Marlowe, I'd like to know what it feels like to go out to Santa Anita with $1,000 and not care if I win or lose. With $1,000, Mr. Marlowe. Today, Mr. Marlowe.
$1,000? For what, Jeff?
For what I need. To buy off a murder charge.
Are you crazy, kid?
You got it, Lou. You gonna give it to me?
You're crazy? How deep into it can you get? $1,000 now? $1,000 a week, maybe, for the rest of your life? And
you're
then
not
you...
gonna do it, huh? You're not gonna give it to me.
Who you buying from, Jeff?
Sloan. Runs the beer joint on the highway. He saw me and Karen outside his...
$1,000, huh? He must have seen a lot.
You'll get it back, Lou. Every nickel.
All right, Jeff. Drive me to my bank. And Jeff...
Thanks. Thanks.
That's not what I meant. This is what I meant. This'll do it, Jeff. It's as far as I can go. So luck and a long life, kid.
We just stared at each other for a while. Then I had to lift his hand from his side to shake it. No more talk. I drove him to his bank. Lou got the money. He gave it to me. I drove him to his house and then went to Sloan's joint. Bought a bottle of beer. Drank half of it. Paid him $1,000 for it. Sloan laughed from deep in his stomach. Hi, honey.
Who is this? I'm sorry. There's no one here.
Honey, baby, it's Jeff.
No. No, there's no one here by that... Jeff, listen. The police are here. They...
What are you...
That you, Marlowe? This is Anders Marlowe, Sheriff's Office. Now, listen. Sloan, that beer joint fella, he called the office a little while ago, said you offered him $100 to keep his mouth shut.
$100?
Now, you come in, Marlowe, because when you did that, you practically signed a confession. Marlowe, you understand what's happening to you, don't you? You understand what's going to happen to you?
I let the receiver hang and let him talk into nothing, and I ran. Off the coast highway, down the beach, a couple of miles... Farther to Santa Monica Pier. Farther to Ocean Park. Me. Wanted for murder. Because Karen, dead Karen, wanted a part of my life and I wouldn't give it to her. Because her girlfriend stuck her face into mine and yelled, cop. Girlfriend, Phyllis George. I found her address in the Venice phone book. I went there. Rooming house overlooking one of the phony canals they have. Second floor rear. Phyllis, scared, staring, holding it in.
You just get out, you hear? Just keep away from me.
You gotta help me, you understand? Things you know about Karen. Fellas she knew. One fella, maybe, who wanted her dead.
You did it. Nobody wanted her dead.
Help me, help me.
What was it you had with Karen? It makes you choke her and kill her and throw her out in the ocean like she was...
I didn't kill her.
You get out of here, huh? Because you scare me. Because you...
Just listen, huh? Anything you know about her that I can take to the cops...
Keep away. Keep away. Kill her. Kill her. Kill...
Shut up. Shut up.
Like Karen, huh? That's how you jump? That's what you did to her, killer? That? Like you wanted to do to me just now?
No, I... Don't do...
Hello.
Lou, this is Jeff.
Where are you, kid?
Listen, how's Janie? I didn't call her because the line's probably tapped or something. How's Janie, Lou?
She's okay. Where are you?
I want you to meet me, Lou. Tell me how things are going. How... I gotta talk to somebody.
Sure. Where are you?
Phone booth outside a drive-in laundry in Venice.
Rose and 3rd Avenue.
I'll pick you up there, kid.
Right away, Lou.
Right away.
How you feeling, kid?
Scared, Lou.
Yeah, I'll bet.
How did I get into this, Lou? What happened? Why am I running away?
Jeff, let's not...
Let's not what?
Let's not kid, too. That alibi I gave you.
Oh, what do you mean, let's not kid, Lou?
The way you pounced on the alibi, paying blackmail. Is that any way for an innocent...
You're saying what, Lou?
Come on, Jeff.
You really think I killed her, don't you?
Listen, Jeff, Janie and I were talking...
Janie thinks I killed her.
Yeah. Yeah, she does, Jeff. You ask and I told you.
Okay. Okay. What are we stopping for?
This is where you're getting out.
What are you talking about? Hey, what is this?
Open the door, Marlo. That's the boy. Now, come on out. That's it. You can slide out too, Mr. Foster.
Sure. Sure.
Lou.
That's right. I told Mr. Anders I'd bring you here, kid.
Look, I didn't kill her. I did a lot of things wrong, but I didn't...
Just don't whimper, Jeff, huh? The old nerve, kid. Like sliding in on a big one. Like the thrill things, kid, huh? Like you and Karen.
It wasn't like that.
How was it, kid, huh? What was the formula? Flex the muscle and be polite. Brown eyes looking up at you in here. Take my coat. You must be cold. And let's have a beer and back to the beach.
Lou.
Back to the beach. And after all of it, she was only kidding all the time. What did you strangle her for?
The coat, Lou. How did you know about it?
What?
The coat. My coat I put on her.
Sure. The one she was drowned in.
There was no coat.
I went back there after she'd been murdered. Took the coat from her and burned it. The same crazy reason I did everything wrong. How do you know about the coat, Lou?
Now, look...
Nobody knew about that coat but me. And whoever killed her.
Then why did you come running to me for an alibi?
I didn't, Lou. You suggested I ought to have one. You would be my alibi. That way you'd have one, too.
What about it, Foster?
What can he say? Those phone calls. Call and hang up till Janie got on the line. Then let Janie listen to her in pain... and calling out my name. Start suspicion right at home base. You really built it, didn't you?
We
better go.
Hey, don't shoot that, Foster! Stop! Hey! Hey, don't!
Didn't die. He'll stand trial. Summer's fading and vacation's long over. But sometimes on weekends, Janie drives me out to Point Dume. And we sit there. And we watch the sunset ride in on the long, slow curve of surf. And we don't talk.
Is like a morning spring in the lilt of Irish laughter. You can hear the angels sing when Irish hearts are happy, all the world seems bright and gay, and when Irish eyes are smiling, sure they steal your heart away.
In search of the finest of its kind, we bring you the tops in Spine Chillers.
And you are listening to Radio Masterpieces on Valley 103.1, serving Duval, Carnation, and Redmond Ridge. The door is slowly closing for Radio Masterpieces, but be sure and tune in again next week from 9 to 10 p.m. to listen to more wonderful mysteries from the 1940s and 50s. This is Bruce Kaplan signing off. Radio Masterpieces is a Seattle Miracle Incorporated production.